The district attorney is the most powerful elected person in the criminal justice system. Yet, most people don't know who they are or what they do. On November 13th, Prison Pipeline speaks with the ACLU of Oregon about their new campaign to educate the public about the role of district attorneys, why they matter, and how we can use our voices to reform our criminal justice system. Join us on Prison Pipeline, November 13th at 6:30 p.m.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Hello and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host every second Monday of the month. Today, I'm happy to welcome back Dr. Nasha Winters, naturopathic physician and licensed acupuncturist, back to Health Watch to continue our conversation that we had last May about the treatment of cancer, the metabolic approach to the treatment of cancer. And we're here to specifically talk about the ketogenic diet. And Dr. Nasha Winters is the founder and CEO and visionary of Optimal Terrain Consulting. She is nationally board certified naturopathic doctor, licensed acupuncturist, and a fellow of the American Board of Naturopathic Oncology. She lectures throughout the world, training physicians in the application of mistletoe therapy and consulting with researchers on projects involving immune modulation via mistletoe, hyperthermia, and the ketogenic diet. She lives in Durango, Colorado, working with patients there and over the phone and throughout the world. Dr. Nasha Winters, welcome back to Health Watch.
Thank you so much, Ellen. It's fantastic to be back.
Well, I want to thank you because you came in quickly, and I'm so happy to continue this conversation. I wondered if you could just start by helping our listeners to understand exactly what the ketogenic diet is and how it's used.
Sure. So a lot of folks, when they think ketogenic diet today, they remember back to a time of Dr. Atkins, the Atkins diet. Now, the Atkins diet was a very high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet, and the ketogenic diet we're going to talk about today is actually still low carbohydrate, but even low to, at the very most, moderate protein diet, and the bulk of it is fat. So the keto itself, the ketogenic diet itself, is well known for just being a low carbohydrate diet. And when we get our levels low enough, we start to produce these things from our liver known as ketones. And our body has had kind of the ability to run like a hybrid car since we first came into existence. And that times when food is scarce, we move into a natural state of ketosis, which helps our body survive basically when food intake is low, and to keep our brains and organs functioning so we don't starve to death.
So what is ketosis? Is it literally, are we starting to use our own fat, or what's happening there?
Great question. So with ketosis itself, it is shifting over from using carbohydrates as fuel, which is a primary fuel source for, of course, most of the cells in our body. We can then shift over to using basically fat and fatty acids that the ketones are converted into, or make, I should say, show up in the body in the state of a low carbohydrate environment. And so we literally go from burning carbohydrate as our fuel source to burning fat as our fuel source in a state of ketosis. And just to be clear, a lot of people can get confused about ketosis, especially your doctors or nutritionists, who think when we talk about ketosis, we're talking about a dangerous pathologic condition known as ketoacidosis. And ketoacidosis is when we still have elevated glucose, so elevated sugar or carbohydrates, along with elevated ketones that are really elevated. We're talking ranges of over 15 on a blood test, and that is a dangerous state and really, really rare and really only seen in unregulated types of type 1 diabetes. So when I'm talking about ketosis, this is a very different animal altogether. It's a state where both your glucose is low, okay, preferably under 80, and your ketones are either in a what we call a natural or nutritional ketosis state, which is just from like a 0.5 to a 3 on our blood ketone monitors. Now, that's a state that we normally can get into when we have healthy metabolism by just simply finishing dinner, sleeping through the night, and anywhere from 12 to 16 hours later having breakfast. We should all naturally start to show up some ketones in our urine, blood, and breath just from a simple night of fasting. Unfortunately, most of us don't do that today, thanks to adding just copious amounts of sugar to our diet in the last 150 years.
So the copious amount of sugars that most people seem to ingest, whether they choose to or it's just in the food supply, you're saying is really wreaking havoc with the metabolism and creating all kinds of problems like diabetes, obesity. They've even done some research about cancer, et cetera. So by taking those carbs down, then what do people eat in the ketogenic diet?
Perfect. Well, first of all, it's funny that we call this a low-carb diet. It actually should be called a normal carbohydrate diet, but we've gotten so far away from normal in the last 100 years or so that we've had to reframe our languaging and call it low-carb. So just to give you an example, in the late 1800s, we were averaging every day about 30 grams of carbohydrate in our diet. Okay, and then the rest of it came from fat and protein from different sources. Today, our diet is easily 70 to 80% carbohydrate, and that's even based on the registered dietitian recommendations. Our plate per the government, it used to be the food pyramid, now it's the food plate. But basically, we really promote a high carbohydrate diet, and that's not for our health. Unfortunately, that is thanks to some political changes over the years and subsidies to a lot of those high carbohydrate foods that are in our food system today. So when we talk about what the heck do you eat if you are on a ketogenic diet, here's the basic sort of skeleton. Now, depending on the person, the metabolic flexibility of that person, the condition they're trying to avoid or treat, it could look anywhere from a 75 to 85% base camp of fat. And when I say fat, we've spent the last, since the 70s, being very fat phobic. We've put everybody on low-fat diets. That also added to the problem we've had of adding so much sugar to our diet. We also then cut out the fat. And when you cut out the fat, you cut out the taste and you increase your hunger. And so we augmented that with yet more sugar. So you can see where we've turned kind of the wrong way in the last couple of decades. So once you get the good fats, and when I'm talking about fat, I'm talking about olive oil, olives, coconut oil, macadamia nut oil, down to things like avocados themselves and avocado oil, nuts, seeds. And at a time, our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents also enjoyed in a liberal amount things like lard, animal fat that we cooked. I remember my grandmother having a tin can underneath her kitchen sink where she kept all the drippings from her roasts and her bacon and whatnot that always became the fat in anything she baked or cooked. We've gotten very far from that today and started putting people on high omega-6 rich vegetable fats, which are not optimal fats. So the canola, the corn, the soybean, those are actually very aggravating and very inflammatory and not the fats we're talking about here. Then we talk about the moderate protein intake. So that's going to be 10 to 20% of the calories are going to be coming from moderate protein. So this is where I explain to people, you're going to have no more than a few ounces a day of animal protein or protein in general, which thinking of it more of like a condiment, kind of the cherry on top, if you will. And then typically we eat less than 10%, closer to 5% of the diet as carbohydrate. And because carbohydrates are so rich in so many of our natural plant foods, like our vegetables, you don't want to waste that valuable real estate with things like grains and legumes and starchy potatoes, which aren't vegetables. Those are tubers and root vegetables or root, part of the root family. So you want to bulk up your carbohydrates in that department in those above ground, low carbohydrate, leafy greens that are just loaded with our wonderful micronutrients that make our whole immune system and whole body hum.
So What happens when someone goes from a kind of more standard American diet, a lot of carbs, maybe a lot of fats, and kind of talking like fats like processed meats, et cetera, and why would they go on a ketogenic diet?
Well, today, I mean, actually, we started using a ketogenic diet back in the 1920s. We had some very observant physicians noticing that children with epilepsy would have less episodes of epileptic seizures when they were in a fasted state. So they started studying that population, studying what was going on, and what they found were these ketones in the blood. And so there's three types of ketones. There's acetate, okay, and the acetate is what comes out of our breath. That's often that sweet smell you smell in people who are who've been fasting for a long period of time. You can smell that on the breath. Then there's acetoacetate, which is often taken up by the muscle, and that is also used by the brain, and it's what we see in our urine when we're testing our urine. And then we have the beta-hydroxybutyrate, which is what we're testing in the blood. So these three different ketones are what we make in our liver and will utilize for proper energy utilization. So epilepsy happened to be something that responded in seizures, and low thresholds for seizures respond very beautifully to a very low carbohydrate, high ketosis state, even more effectively than the pharmaceuticals available on the market today. And it fell out of favor as a treatment for epilepsy when Dilantin came out on the market, which is an anti-seizure medication that came out in the 40s. And doctors kind of just spending the time teaching families how to do the ketogenic diet, and instead just quickly wrote a script. Even today, still the most effective way to treat epilepsy in children is with this diet. So fast forward many years, and people like Otto Warburg and people who started studying the metabolism of chronic illness and cancer, we also started to learn that changing our fuel source, so going from that hybrid fuel system we just talked about, moving from a carbohydrate-driven car to a fat or ketone-driven car, makes that car much more effective and efficient. We actually make more ATP, more energy, from ketone bodies versus from glucose. And it's a more elegant sort of fueling system. We'll often use this diet today. There's loads of research in its use in obesity and diabetes, which makes sense, right? Because mm-hmm. those are diets that are pretty carbohydrate driven. But we're also having amazing research and information about its use in cardiovascular disease. Again, we put all the fear and worry into lipids, into fat, and yet what we now understand is that most of our cholesterol woes were based on high carbohydrate inflammatory processes versus fat processes. And then the big research, in fact, I just returned from a conference 2 weeks ago at Hopkins, co-hosted by Hopkins, on Alzheimer's and cancer, and using the base camp of a ketogenic diet to enhance any of our therapeutic interventions, whether it's chemotherapy in a cancer patient or some of the medications that are being used for the Alzheimer's population today. So we're just really starting to get into some pretty provocative research in a lot of areas where the ketogenic diet can really help the chronic illnesses that are plaguing us in modern times.
So help us understand how, like, you know, we know about how Chinese medicine is used in conjunction with cancer treatments to help in the treatment of nausea, to support the immune system, et cetera. Tell us what they're discovering about how the ketogenic diet benefits someone who's also undergoing maybe conventional cancer therapies.
Fantastic. Yeah. And that's such a good question because, you know, as an integrative oncologist, I don't promote 100%, you know, quote unquote alternative or 100% conventional. I promote what is right for the patient at any given time, and meeting the patient and their body where they are and helping them respond to any of their therapeutic choices as optimally as possible. So that being said, a few things we've learned, especially in the field of oncology, so of cancer care. We started to learn about 10 or so years ago that patients with elevated glucose and elevated insulin, their cancer cells are non-sensitive, so they're not sensitive to therapies like radiation. So what happens in the face of cancer and a high glucose insulin level, that you could go ahead and give that patient radiation, which many patients get, but if they do not have normalized metabolism and if they have high sugar and insulin, they're going to be less responsive to that therapy and, in fact, have more side effects and also have more aggressive mutations that will have a more aggressive recurrence. So my recommendation, and a lot of my colleagues that are conventional radio-oncologists, are now getting patients onto a ketogenic diet before they start radiation, because they know that they'll have better outcomes, the patient will have a better tumor response, and the patient will feel better through the process. And because radiation in and of itself, okay, high-dose radiation is absolute in that it destroys the DNA and the mitochondria and, of course, leads to more cancer, you want to protect those cells, the healthy cells, as much as possible. And the ketogenic diet sort of cloaks them and protects them from the radiation while sensitizing the cancer cells to the radiation. That's one of our findings. We've also found similar findings with using things like PARP inhibitors, which are a really big treatment now in a lot of breast and ovarian cancers. Those also don't work very well. They're on the same pathway as things like mTOR, PI3KC, and some of these other metabolic pathways that are sensitive to sugar. And so basically, a natural PARP inhibitor is a ketogenic diet. And if you take the PARP inhibitor and you have high glucose levels, this drug isn't going to do a darn thing for you. We've also seen that with a variety of other cancer treatments like chemotherapies, Dr. Longo's work, for intermittent fasting in relationship to platinum drugs and the doxorubicin-adriamycin family, found that simply fasting was more effective at pushing back the tumor than the treatment itself. Yet when you combine an intermittent fast or a ketogenic state with those chemotherapeutic agents, you get an amazing synergy that's even far more potent than either of those could be on their own. So those are just some examples where we're seeing this therapy is absolutely enhancing our conventional treatments and helping protect the healthy cells. Because if folks haven't heard this before, the American Cancer Society states that 70% of all patients who've had cancer will have a recurrence. And frankly, this is related to a metabolic mitochondrial shift that was likely present prior to the diagnosis of cancer, because that's how cancer gets going. And it's certainly been kicked up after treatment has been initiated and completed. And so you want to do all you can to make sure you're addressing why you got the cancer to begin with, helping the body during the treatment, and surely cleaning it up afterwards.
So that's a lot that said, let's get off refined carbohydrates and sugar right there.
Right? It's like, don't be the statistic. So we could start by cleaning up our mitochondria for any condition, because cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, dementias, Alzheimer's, I mean, we're now calling Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes, right? This diet is so applicable to all of our modern illnesses. And so much of that is thanks to our low-fat dietary recommendations since the 1970s and our high sugar intake since the early 1900s.
Absolutely. So tell me, for our listeners out there going, well, ketogenic diet sounds like Whole 30 or it sounds like paleo. How is it the same and how is it different?
Oh, I love that. So, well, first of all, the commonalities of all anti-cancer diets, whether they're the paleo, the Whole 30, ketogenic, vegan, raw food, you know, any of those combinations, is that the base camp should still be real food. Okay.
Right.
Nothing processed or packaged, or, you know, if it's been made in a factory, you probably shouldn't eat it. So keeping it as close to the original source is absolute for all these, for whatever food you choose, right? That's one important thing. The second important thing is a base camp of quality, high nutrient, low glycemic vegetable matter. Okay. You need that fiber, you need those phytonutrients, you need those polyphenols. You need that as the cofactors to make the engine hum.
So what would
and
those...
And so that is things like, gosh, you're like, I love Dr. Terry Wall's approach when she talks about the 9 cups. This is the medical doctor who cured herself of MS with a very nutrient, vegetable-based, dense ketogenic diet. And so in her 9 cups, she talks about 3 cups of leafy greens, 3 cups of cruciferous vegetables, which are our brassica family, like cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage. Those leafy greens could be things from arugula to romaine to kale, collards, you know, things like that. And then the other 3 are just colorful vegetables. So the peppers, other parts of the Solanaceae family, the tomatoes, the peppers, those bright colored vegetables, as well as some of those root vegetables that are rich in some of those purples and oranges, different squashes like the zucchinis and summer squash are very low glycemic, but very nutrient dense. So she shoots for 9 cups a day of those along with her ketogenic diet. And that's a common thread in all the anti-cancer diets out there, is a lot of those veggies. Now, the similarities with the paleo specific is that keto, because we're not wasting our valuable real estate on carbohydrates outside of our vegetables, the common thread between the two of them is they forego legumes, potatoes, and grain, you know, so any of the grain family, maybe for different reasons. You know, the paleo avoids it because of more of an an ancient medicine, evolutionary kind of perspective, whereas the keto is avoiding it because they're carbohydrate-rich foods. So there might be a different reason why they choose. Now, the one thing about paleo that also differs is that it tends to be a lot higher protein, and they're not withholding sugar in the forms of honey, maple syrup, the natural like palm sugars, coconut sugars. They're still pretty liberal with using a lot of those high sugar, although be it natural sweeteners, it's far too much carbohydrate for someone who's trying to reach a state of ketosis.
So actually in the ketogenic diet, there's no sweetener or sugars at all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If you're in the transition and you need some support, we'll recommend a pure leaf extract of stevia or the pure monk fruit. And for those who can tolerate a bit of the sugar alcohols, like the xylitol or erythritol, those are going to be really negligible impact on insulin response. You know, I'm always still trying to teach patients, though, we tend to want our sweet tooth to be, you know, to be dealt with. And so I try to help people start to find sweetness out of their normal foods without having to add more to it. But you can certainly use those alternative sweeteners in the transition or in moderation.
So someone who's listening and they're saying, well, this sounds really interesting, I'd like to try it out. You know, people want to try out different kinds of diets. Do you recommend a ketogenic diet for someone who's asymptomatic or relatively healthy?
Yeah, so just to think back kind of intuitively, there was, really even only 50 years ago and beyond, we would naturally go in and out of a ketogenic state. Okay, it was just part of our process, just like I said early on in the interview. If you've got a normal functioning metabolism, just simply fasting from dinner till breakfast, hence the name break fast, should put you into a low state of ketosis. If you're not seeing urine ketones first thing in the morning, then you know that you probably have some work to do to create some metabolic flexibility. So I recommend people go and purchase maybe from Amazon the Bare Ketone Urinary Strips, and see if you're at least showing trace ketones. And if you are, then you probably have a little bit more metabolic flexibility. If you're someone who has a strong family history, though you're asymptomatic or been told by your doctors that there's nothing going on with you, then if you want to kind of tune up the system, maybe pushing to go towards more moderate ketones on your urinary strips, and that might need a little bit longer fasting, 13 to 16 hours. Might be helpful with that. If you're hungry, if you're the person who has to eat every couple of hours, that right there tells me that you're not metabolically flexible, and that you likely should be working on this a little bit with someone who can help you understand why and help you correct that imbalance. But one of the things we did, typically in the winter, our food sources were scarce. But today I can get a papaya in the middle of the winter in Durango, Colorado, and my colleagues in Hawaii can get, a pumpkin, from the middle of the summer. So it's a really bizarre thing that we have access to all these foods all the time now. So our body never knows a state of starvation. And then we freak out emotionally around lack in our world, in our culture. And we're kind of taught never to feel hunger. And so that's a place that our recent ancestors experienced on a regular time. In fact, there's even some studies that show that those ancestors who experienced times of famine have actually hardier offspring, hardier downstream relatives epigenetically that have less issues of insulin resistance, obesity, diabetes, and cancers. So it's not dangerous to, you know, feel hunger on occasion and work with your body naturally to induce a state of ketosis. So for folks who just want to use this and play with it, maybe look at cycling it once a season, meaning maybe you eat a ketogenic-like diet, a little stronger ketosis process, you know, 1 to 2 weeks every season, just to kind of prime the pump.
That sounds like a great idea. Just like a seasonal fasting or, yeah, like you said, intermittent fasting of sorts. So you're eating, but in a sense you're fasting because you're changing the mechanism of your metabolism there.
You got it. And, you know, you said it so beautifully, too, that a point to make is that eating in narrow eating windows, in restricted windows, can do an enormous amount for our body's ability to go into what's known as autophagy, which is basically like I think of like a street sweeper coming through your colon and cleaning out all the debris, all the cells that are dead and damaged or kind of just not working very well before you put new food, new information into the system. It's like it's kind of cleaning house. So having some extended periods can help clean up the body and ready it for the next fuel source coming through.
Absolutely. Dr. Nasia Winters, how could people get in touch with you if they want to find out more about, tell us a little bit about, how they can get in touch with you and what kind of people you work with.
Sure. Well, as of the last couple of years, I focus primarily in helping folks who are dealing with a cancer diagnosis, whether they're trying to avoid a recurrence, whether they're in current treatment or they're dealing with a progression, or they're someone who had a strong family history and really want to not be part of the statistics, right? So I work with a wide variety of folks at any level of their treatment and prevention and cleanup from conventional therapies. So that's kind of my primary focus, though I, of course, will happily work with folks who just want to clean up their terrain, if you will, given the name of my business is Optimal Terrain Consulting. So what I do with folks is I help test, assess, and address what's going on under the hood. There's a lot more going on that meets the eye. A lot of people say things like, hey, I was healthy until I was diagnosed with cancer. Well, that's just simply not true. You can't be healthy and get cancer. Those two don't align. And so I help people really dig deeper and realize where their weaknesses are and basically fortify and strengthen and support their system. And that may often be with the use and implication of a diet like a ketogenic diet or at least an intermittent fasting process. So folks can find me on optimalterrainconsulting.com. You can also find me under the Facebook page of Optimal Terrain Consulting. And also my co-author, Jess Higgins Kelly, and I have a book called The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, which is available on Amazon, Chelsea Green Publishing, and all of your bookstores, and also natural grocers throughout the country. And you can also find our Facebook page of that same name, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer. And I think those are the main ways to find me and work with me. And often the book is a great starting point.
It is. It's an exhaustive book. It has tons of information. I mean, in a most wonderful way. It's a great resource. It's not going to tire you out. You can read section by section. So I really recommend it. I want to thank you, Dr. Nasia Winters, for speaking with us today about the ketogenic diet. It's been very, very informative, very helpful.
Great, Ellen. Thank you again for the opportunity, and I wish you the best.
Same to you. We've been speaking with Dr. Nasia Winters, author of The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, Integrating Deep Nutrition, the Ketogenic Diet, and Non-Toxic Bio-Individualized Therapies. I want to thank you for tuning in this morning and listening in to Health Watch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host. And you can listen to this episode and others by going to kboo.fm/healthwatch or listen in and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Big Waters Falling Up Tour, Tuesday, November 14th at 8 p.m. at the Paris Theater in Portland. Portland locals Big Water will be closing out their Falling Up tour, featuring special guest Danielle Betancourt on the violin. Big Water will also be sponsoring a feeding for houseless people through AMA Global Care and the Paris Theater. Again, that's Big Water's Falling Up Tour, Tuesday, November 14th at 8 p.m. at the Paris Theater, 6 Southwest 3rd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This week on Making Contact.
Leaving aside the bloody catalog of oppression, which we are in one way too familiar with already, what this does to the subjugated is destroy his sense of reality. This means, in the case of an American Negro, born in that glittering republic, and in the moment you are born, since you don't know any better, every stick and stone and every face is white, and since you have not yet seen the mirror, you suppose that you are too. It comes as a great shock, around the age of 5 or 6 or 7, to discover that Gary Cooper killing off the Indians when you were rooting for Gary Cooper, that the Indians were you. It comes as a great shock to discover that the country which is your birthplace and to which you owe your life and your identity has not in its whole system of reality evolved any place for you.
That's activist, public intellectual, and writer James Baldwin. Today on Making Contact, you'll hear excerpts from the Oscar-nominated documentary, I Am Not Your Negro. Inspired by an unfinished manuscript, Remember This House, that Baldwin was working on at the time of his death in 1987, about the lives of Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and Medgar Evers. The film, directed by Raoul Peck,